Behind your favourite magazines lie hours and hours of solitary and near-solitary toil, the industry of fanatics hunched over InDesign, stuck in what can sometimes feel like a state of print purgatory. No wonder, then, that this invisible army jump at any chance to get outside and share ideas with like-minded magazine fanatics. This week, a report from one of the most anticipated print meets of the year, the 5th annual ModMag Conference. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan, and I'm sat opposite my counterpart, Fernando Pacheco. We're going to be co-piloting this week's episode, because Fernando has recently attended the ModMag Conference. Fernando, begin by telling me a little bit about the event. What is it? What's its history?
Well, Jeremy Leslie, of course, a Stack regular, he founded the event, I believe, in 2013. And I think he's doing a fantastic event. I think, basically, he was saying, because every year people ask, well, what are the theme this year? He said, it's just a reunion of magazine editors, designers, people who like magazines and have a story to tell. And what I like about the Modern Magazine Conference is that you can hear the editor of a very niche title, but you have major publications like The New Yorker coming in, or other more commercial titles as well. I like this diversity. So, yeah, well done, Jeremy. I think you did a good job.
And Faye, before we talk about some of the specifics of this year's conference, maybe you can tell me a bit more about the organisation behind the conference, because as you've mentioned, Jeremy Leslie is a regular on the Stack. Regular listeners will be familiar with him and ModMag. But for people who maybe don't know as much, what's his story? What's ModMag's story?
First of all, Jeremy Leslie has the website magculture.com, which is basically a lot of interviews with editors of magazines. He collects a few stories from the print world, and I think he's been doing well, and he wanted to experiment. I think he even have a shop in London selling magazines. You know, it's been expanding, so I think for him, he said, you know what, I think we should do a conference about it. So I think it started very organically, and it's been growing, and it became like a, you know, a fixture event in London.
And tell me a little bit about the format of the event, which I think has remained pretty stable, hasn't it, throughout
its existence. You go there from 9:30 to 5:30, and it's one panel after another. And it's interesting to see, because every panels are different, you know. So sometimes it can be, what I like, you know, can be a very short one. For example, our colleague James Hyman was there for talking about this Hyman archive. Very brief chat, 15 minutes. There were some videos, was quite snappy. But then you had the Popeye editor, Takahiro Kinoshita. Of course, it was a bit slower, but it was so nice. He was telling about the history of the magazine, and he needed a translator as well. So there's all sorts of different dynamics. And of course, there's drinks in the end.
Importantly, now I feel that we've already heard so much about Jeremy Leslie, the man behind the event. Let's hear even more now. This is you in conversation with Jeremy at the 5th ModMag conference.
Congratulations, the 5th edition.
It is the 5th, yeah.
And what I like, because, you know, people ask what are the themes, but, you know, it's just a celebration of magazines in all its forms.
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, I think you can overthink these things. And what I found talking to people, seeing what they enjoy about it, is just the variety of people that make magazines and the variety of stories they have to share. There is, of course, a degree of doom and gloom around the subject of magazine publishing. But actually, when you meet the people that are doing it, who are pouring their love and passion into it, there's a lot to celebrate. There's some great projects out there, and I'm really keen to highlight that. And that's what we try to do annually with ModMag.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, some gloomy stories. For example, Teen Vogue closed down this week. But at the same time, were there any bright spots this year, would you say, in the publishing industry?
Well, there are plenty of bright spots as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it is a challenging time, and it's disappointing to hear about Teen Vogue, because it seemed to be just hitting its stride. But even within Condé Nast at the same time, they're launching new brands and new publishing platforms. They've just launched a thing for LGBT people called Them. So, I mean, it's a kind of change of resource within that, you know, from one project to a new project. But for me, the most exciting thing is this ongoing wave of young people that want to make magazines. The hunger is there to make them. The challenge is the business model, and the business model is a challenge whether you're working digitally or in print. Paying for content is the hurdle we have to get over. But above and beyond that, from where I'm standing on the creative side, it's a hugely exciting time, and I think that's one of the things we're demonstrating today.
Before we come back to the conference, I want to find out how's the Mag Culture Shop going. It's been such an amazing launch. I wonder how many titles are you stocking at the moment. Tell us a bit more about this experience, this retail experience that you've been through.
Well, I guess that's part of what I'm talking about in terms of finding bright spots is, you know, there are more and more people wanting us to stock their magazines, and there are more and more magazines we want to stock, to the point where next week I've got a meeting with my colleague Jamie, who runs the shop, to discuss how we're going to fit more magazines into it. We've got about 450 in stock at the moment from all around the world, and they're much wanted. We have we're selling increasing numbers of these magazines. We have a pop-up shop here today in the form of a magazine. I don't know if you've been to see it, but we've actually made a big magazine that opens up with magazines inside it. But the shop's going very well, thank you. It's just come up to 2 years, and I can't believe it's gone so fast. You know, the only problem running the shop is having the space to show off all the magazines that we want to in the style that we want to, you know.
And talking about the guests of the conference, amazing, you have like young new editors, but you also have incredible iconic titles here. You have the creative director of the New Yorker, someone from Popeye magazine from Japan. So you're really pushing, I think, every event you have to get a bigger name.
Well, when we started this, it was quite small, and it's grown year on year. We're not trying to sort of push it too hard, but it's growing organically year on year. At the end of each year, we have to collapse and sort of have a bit of a rest. And I always think, oh, can we pull it off next year? Can we do it? And then by the time that it's time to plan the next one, there's other fantastic magazines around, and you get excited again, you build it up. And by then, there's more people have heard about it. You know, we're not interested in making it into a huge event, but we're interested to accommodate it as it grows. So we're in a new venue, and we're very happy in the new venue at Conway Hall. And we're delighted to, you know, as I said in my introduction, for me, what sums up the day is that we opened with the Migrant Journal, which is a small new project, very exciting. I think even its founders have been amazed by the response they've had to their magazine. But it's, you know, it's a small startup. But then we end with the design director from the New Yorker, which is one of the most established and well-regarded magazines in the world. And between those two poles, we've got just about everything else represented.
And finally, Jeremy, I know we're still in November, but can you say anything about 2018? Are you positive about the industry, even about your projects for next year?
Yeah, no, I continue to feel positive. I think there's a lot of stuff happening. Today we're launching a podcast. I mean, one of the things on the Mag Culture Journal is we don't exclusively focus on design and art direction, but a lot of it covers that kind of area. But we also do cover the content and writing, but we're just launching a new podcast project, which we're very excited about, in partnership with WeTransfer, where I've interviewed a series of magazine editors, just looking at one article from one issue of their magazine. So that's a project that's in hand. Very excited by the potential for audio going forward. We've got more and more events at the shop. We've got a big event based around the launch of the book, The Story of the Face, which I'll be announcing at lunchtime today. So I'm feeling very positive about it. I can't quite look into 2018 in terms of bigger stories beyond my little bubble, but we're feeling good.
Jeremy Levy there, talking with Fernando Pacheco, who's sitting opposite me. Fernando, you had the privilege of chatting with many other luminaries from the magazine world at the ModMag conference. Who are we going to be speaking to next?
Well, Henry, I thought of you about my next guest, I have to say, because I know you were a big, big fan of The New Yorker.
Big fan.
To be fair, I mean, they have many fans in the office as well. So it was a privilege. I mean, I think it was the last panel of the day. It's interesting because The New Yorker, for me, they almost have like this cult image. It's like Vogue is for fashion, I think New Yorker is for kind of long-form journalism. He was such a nice guy. He's the creative director for a magazine like The New Yorker because, you know, it's quite a traditional magazine, same format since, I believe, 1925. But, you know, he's the one who has to kind of do some tweaks here and there, but without making the readers upset, because he was telling any little change, the readers will send an email complaining.
Let's hear you speaking to Nicholas Bleckman. He is, as you said, the creative director of The New Yorker, about how he maintains the legacy of that venerable publication.
Our numbers have risen. It's been, I think, the largest bump that we've had in a long time since, and they went up immediately right after Trump was elected. So from November 9th onwards, we saw a spike in terms of circulation, in terms of our readers online. And I think the same would be true of the New York Times and the other publications like the Atlantic and the Washington Post.
What are the challenges of designing a magazine? Because as you mentioned, you know, since the beginning of the magazine a few years ago, so there's not much change, but at the same time, you still need to remain fresh. But I think the New Yorker is the kind of magazine that you should be very careful if you're going to change something. So what do you think the challenges of designing such an iconic publication?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the magazine itself, it was designed in 1925, and it looks great then, and it looks great now. So a large part of my job is just kind of making sure that that tradition carries on. So it's kind of like policing. I almost play the role of a cop, and I have to just like make sure that people don't get too crazy with the design or too crazy with the cartoons. So it all kind of like fits together. But there are small areas in which it can always, there's always room for improvement. So I would say that it's like a constant fine-tuning and tweaking the typography that are the design challenges. Otherwise, I would say most of the challenges are really on the digital side rather than on the print side.
Talking about typography, it was very interesting to know that you guys can only use red or black, and red is used very sparingly.
Yes, I mean, I think that's the red and black look so fantastic together. Of course, the temptation is to use it as often as possible, but really it's a black and white magazine. So I try to tell the designers to just, if you use red, just use it as a small accent color. The big no-no is to do something in all caps or to use a bold typeface, and then on top of that to also use red. So really all you need is just like a little bit of emphasis, is just like a small amount of red.
Which cover of the magazine, since you've been working there, are you most proud? I know that's a tough question because probably you have a few favorites, but if you could mention one, perhaps.
After the Las Vegas shooting, David Plunkett did a cover in which he did, for the number of people who were killed, he drew a bullet for each person who had died and put the name of that person on the bullet. Or, I mean, there was a Purple Rain cover that was just basically, the whole cover was just rain, Purple Rain, for when Prince died. And you didn't have to say that Prince died. You didn't have to say what the reference was. You didn't have to show a picture of Prince. But somehow covers like that really resonate. And I feel like that's where you see the power of illustration, where there's a drawing that can sum up how people feel or can communicate things that a photograph can't. And I think that's the strength of the New Yorker covers.
I think I know the answer for that, but just want to double check with you, perhaps, that I think at the New Yorker, print is still king, right? I mean, you do, guys, you're investing in digital, in other, you know, elements, festivals, but print, I think, is still the main product.
Yes. It is. Yeah, all of our subscription, people really want to have the actual physical copy of the magazine.
It must be quite tough because the magazine is a weekly magazine. How the schedule for publishing an issue of New Yorker works? Are you guys very planned? You know, for example, what you're going to do in about 3 weeks? Of course, something can happen, like, you know, the shootings in Las Vegas or something. But especially in design, do you have a lot of last-minute changes, for example? I wonder in terms of the organization of that.
There's a schedule, and then there's something called the long schedule, and the long schedule goes through. We have every issue planned up until December, but it's almost meaningless because I know it's all going to change. So it's always, the schedule is always being fine-tuned. It's always being shuffled. There's always some late-breaking piece of news, a new article that will come in. So the lineup is constantly changing. I feel like that's really what makes the magazine special. It's like making sure there's the right mix of articles each issue. So a lot of attention is paid to that.
And finally, my last question, I always like to know our guests on the stack, which other magazines do you admire? Perhaps not only for inspiration, but, you know, something that you like to read on a weekend or something.
That's a really good question. I mean, I really, the New York Times Magazine, so it's other news magazines, like the New York Times Magazine, I always look at that. California Sunday Magazine, whenever I get a chance, I look at that. Die Zeit Magazine, when I get a chance, that's also, I feel like with their mission and our mission kind of overlap in many ways. So I would single out those three.
That was Nicholas Bleckman, the creative director of The New Yorker, speaking to Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We're going to bring you more interviews from the ModMag Conference 2017 after this break.
Being a pop star seems like a dazzling, lavish lifestyle, right? But have you ever wondered how your favourite pop song was written?
I do a lot of writing in the bath with my housemate sat on the toilet taking a photo.
Or who that song was really intended for.
Writing love songs in Spanish, I could say really pathetic, sad things, and it would be a secret from the audience and also from the person that I was writing about.
Join us on The Sessions at Midori House each week, where we bring in a wealth of musical talent to perform live for us and reveal a few truths about making music and keeping your ego under control. Well, sometimes.
I'm unconsciously comparing myself like a jackass to Paul McCartney.
From electropop to indie rock and with plenty of soul to boot, tune into The Sessions at Midori House every Saturday at 8:15 London time for lessons in stardom and a soundtrack to kickstart your weekend.
We're back now, talking to Fernando Pacheco, who is presenting us with the best interviews that he recorded at the Mod Mag Conference 2017. Where are we going next, Fernando?
Well, we're going to Germany, and that's another good thing about Mod Mag. It's certainly not only a UK-based event, because now we're heading to Germany. I spoke to Mirko Borsche. I mean, he did spoke to Monaco before. He's a fantastic designer. He designs one of our favorite titles here in the office as well, Zeit Magazine, together with Christoph Amend. And it was so funny to know more about his design tricks to the magazine, because I mean, Zeit Magazine is fantastic. I love the fact they have two covers and they play around with it. So he's going to tell us a very funny story, because he had to do a food issue and they needed a potato on the cover. But
we've all found ourselves in that situation, short of a potato.
Yes,
hey?
But he will tell us more about it. So it's a funny one.
Actually started in 2007, starting for Die Zeit, for Giovanni Di Lorenzo, for the newspaper itself. And then after half a year, he and Christoph asked me to work for Die Zeit magazine, because half a year before that, they reinvented the magazine. And because I did another supplement before for the Süddeutsche Zeitung, they wanted to have like my thoughts about it. So then I started to do the creative direction for it.
And it's very interesting you mentioned in your talk about your relationship with the paper, because I believe for 5 years between 2007 and 2012, you guys had to fly all the time, because, you know, you're based in Munich, yeah. They are in Hamburg, and sometimes it's in Berlin as well. But that changed. Can you explain now, how do you talk to the team now?
Yeah, in the moment it's just telephone conferences. We have two telephone conferences. At least we have like one very long telephone conference once a week. And because we're not allowed to have any video conferences, it's restricted somehow. I don't know why, but maybe it's just don't see anything in the place they're working at. But now we have this talk, so I'm sitting on my iPhone alone, and the other ones are sitting in front of like this conference telephone box, like 10, 15 people, and waiting for the ideas.
I love also what you mentioned about redesigning a magazine. You said that, you know, readers, sometimes they're afraid of change. So what you do is actually brush the magazine a little bit every year, but things sometimes almost unnoticeable for the readers.
Yeah, for me it's important like not to do a big redesign every 2, 3, 4, 5 years, what most of the magazines do. I think you have to, and that's a good thing about a weekly, you come out like 52 times a year, so you can do small changes, like every issue a little change, and then once a year we do a bigger change. But it doesn't have to be a redesign. We call it a rebrush. It's more like a rework and a rephrasing of everything, rethinking, re-questioning like the whole layout, the photography, the illustrators and everything, and then we restart.
Are you allowed to be to push the boundaries? Because of course, you know, you're a supplement of a newspaper, so you're not, you know, you don't need to worry that much about advertising in a way. So you can play around with the design, with the ideas. Do you feel that?
It's, sometimes we do it, but in the end, we want to be like a decent, normal magazine. Because I think, you know, being crazy is one thing, but you want to be reasonable as well, and if you want to be read. And it's a magazine about content, and it's about text, and not about the visuality of the magazine. It's more about what's inside of the magazine. So, yeah, we don't try to overdo it.
Yeah, but at the same time, you had this quite a nice publication, which was an Arabic issue as well. Can you tell us a bit about this one in particular?
The Arabic issue was, I think, in 2015, before the first Syrian refugees came to Germany. It's like at least 1.5 years before that, or a year before that. And everybody was asking us why we do an issue. It was like, it was just a normal type issue. All the content was translated also, on the other hand, in Arabic. And the main part of the magazine was done by Syrians on the way from Syria. I think at that time they've been in Croatia somewhere. I don't really know it anymore, but it's a long time ago. And everybody was asking us why we're doing that. And we said, yeah, but they're going to come. We have to welcome them in a good way, you know. And yeah, we saw 1.5 years later they came here. And I think it's a good, you know, it was a good start to open up people for that.
Absolutely. And also, I was surprised that, you know, Zeit magazine is not only the magazine title that you help out, but you also deal with other publications around the world, from Milano, from Vienna. Tell us a bit more about these other titles. And do you have time for all of those?
Yeah, I definitely have time for all of those. So we have magazines from Milano, which is called Kaleidoscope. Then we have something for New York, which is called Tunica magazine. And then there's the other title you've been talking about is from Vienna and Berlin. It's called Spike magazine, which is an art magazine. And, you know, but they don't come out that often as the Zeit magazine, not 52 times. They're like biannual or quarterly or something like that in a year. And I'm used to, because maybe of the Zeit magazine doing that 10 years, I'm used to work fast.
And also, can you tell us about the potato cover? I really liked it.
You like it?
I really loved it. And it's true, you know, sometimes a picture of a potato would be just boring. Maybe it wouldn't work. Tell us about the cover.
Yeah, we had this. In the end, we do like once or twice a year, we do a food issue because like our readers are the maniacs about cooking. And Christoph came up with the idea to do something very simple, like a potato, like everything around the potato, like all food around the potato worldwide. And then he said, like, yeah, and then we just need a potato on the cover. And we're discussing about how to make a photo out of a potato which looks brilliant and tasty. And I was like, that's almost impossible. And he was like, yeah, we have to try it. And then I said, okay, we do it differently. And then what we did, we asked an illustrator from The New Yorker to draw us a comic potato. It's a woman, really fat, old potato woman, is standing in front of two posters. Just on the first cover, you just see one poster. It's her on the posters. It says before. And then if you turn out the page, you see she's standing in front of two posters. On the other poster, there's a French fry. It's like after.
I love it. And finally, Mikko, which other magazines do you admire? You know, perhaps influence a little bit your work as well?
I think there's a lot in London. I really like Fantastic Man, Gentlewoman, like all these publications which come from here. We saw today Migrant magazine, which I really think is great. New York Times magazine, of course, or Le Monde, because they're like players in the same direction. Italian Vogue, I think it is still one of the best fashion magazines in the world. All 32 Seas, brilliant, I think. Still Der Spiegel, it's a good magazine, I think.
Do you see your design as very German or not really? You don't see this as a characteristic from the country?
That's the thing. It's like if you see design as an authorship, I sometimes see it as an authorship, but I don't necessarily think our design is related to a special design. It's more the way we tell stories, the narrative way of doing things, and that influences our design a lot.
That was one of the great contemporary editorial designers, Mirko Borsche, speaking to Fernando Pacheco. Finally, Fernando, we're going to speak to another European great, Francesco Franchi, one of our favourites here at the Stack and indeed at Monocle in general. Tell me a little bit more about him, about his work.
Well, Francesco Franchi, he's excellent. He works at La Repubblica, one of the most important Italian dailies. This year he launched a new cultural supplement called Robinson, which it looks fantastic. You know, there's an amazing animation, and it's interesting because it's a weekly supplement, so it's not just a monthly magazine or biannual. So there's a lot of work for Francesco. And Henry, he gave us exciting news about the relaunch of La Repubblica, the whole paper, late in November.
Robinson is the cultural supplement of La Repubblica. So every Sunday you can find it in the newsstands, also out of Italy. The idea is to tell about culture starting from the experience, so to reach the knowledge throughout the experience. And we try to create a supplement inside the newspaper, but more similar to a magazine. So something that you can read during the weekend, so with when you are relaxed, so you can appreciate the paper, you can appreciate the quality of the writing. So we work a lot with illustration, because Repubblica, since the beginning, is always invested a lot with illustration. So we have the most talented Italian illustrator inside Robinson working every week to try an alternative way to tell our stories. And it's a product that we can see is also read by young people, and so we are happy about that.
And I want to know, of course, because it's a weekly challenge for you as well. I was talking as well with Nicholas from The New Yorker. You know, how planned are you when it comes to the Robinson issues? Do you have to do some last minute changes, or how does it work, the planning process?
No, but Robinson started from zero, so it was a new project when I arrived at Repubblica. So thanks to the editor-in-chief, thanks to the art director of Repubblica, Angelo Rinaldi, and to all the staff of the newsroom that every week built up the weekly. We work together, everybody. We try to add new ideas. We try to reinvent the format of the supplement of the newspaper. So, for example, we move the cover story from the front of the magazine to the center of the magazine, like you work usually in a weekly. We try to create a sort of rhythm inside the flow of the pages. And we try to work a lot with images. Also, for example, in the last part of the supplement, when we write about books, we write review about books, about theater, cinema, and theater plays, we try to visualize them in a different way. For example, for every book, try to shoot the cover. Sometimes we quote the dimension of the book. So we try to valorize the artwork of the cover of the book.
And it wasn't the only supplement you worked, actually. There was a supplement called Super 8, which you were also involved. Tell us a bit more about this one.
Yeah, in 1 year, together with Mario Calabresi, the editor-in-chief, we tried to launch a different product. One of them was Robinson, another one is called Super 8, which is an attempt to publish long-form journalism. This supplement sold together with the newspaper on every Friday. And we try to invest a lot on content, on the quality of the content, but at the same time also on photography, because sometimes we publish long reportage, we publish a photo from big photographers from all over the world.
And Francesco, I know that you do love new stuff at La Repubblica, because there'll be a big relaunch at the end of November. What can you tell us about it?
We are working on something huge. We completely redesign the paper. We will introduce a new type family, and we called it Eugenio, like a tribute to our founder, Eugenio Scalfari. So it's a very huge family composed by a serif, a sans. Then we have a typeface for the huge headlines, for the negates, sans for the page related to economy and sports. We rethink completely the magazine, starting from the newspaper, starting from the structure. So we have now we have separated section, and we work a lot with navigation system, with the type. You will see. Actually, it will be a great change.
When will you be able to see?
It will be on newsstand starting from the 22nd of November.
Francesco Franchi there, speaking to Faye Fecheco, sitting opposite me. It's interesting, actually, Faye, that Francesco there was mentioning the launch of a new cultural supplement, because we recently covered on the Stack S magazine, which is the new cultural supplement launched by the hard news magazine Der Spiegel. It seems to be a trend in the print world. That is, unfortunately, all we have time for this week and for this year's coverage of the Mod Mag conference. Are there any takeaways that you want to mention before we say goodbye, Faye, that maybe you came away with from the conference?
If you don't mind, another someone else that I spoke at the conference, Takahiro Kinoshita, the editor-in-chief of Popeye magazine. You know, and it's funny because he says, of course, the Japanese publishing market has its problems as well. But he says, if a magazine that, you know, stop existing, is because perhaps it was not very good. It says that good magazines will still survive no matter what. And deep inside my heart, I also believe that. So I think that was a big takeaway. Yes, there are problems in the industry, but there's new titles coming in. I saw a lot of positivity in the event.
Ending in the depth of Fernando Pacheco's heart, that is unfortunately all we have time for this week's show. Thanks a lot to our editors, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. If you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to Fernando at fp@monocle.com. And we're back next week at the same time. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.